Hi everyone, today we've got Alex from Ocean with us. And Alex, you want to introduce yourself?
Hi everybody, my name is Alex Davies. As mentioned, I work at Ocean Protocol and my main focus is the Ocean DAO. And there I really work on community and growth initiatives. We've been working on it just about a year now, the Ocean DAO.
Perfect. And today we want to understand what Ocean is, and more specifically, we want to dive into three things. The token structure of Ocean, Ocean's mechanism, which is Ocean DAO, and also how to grow the Ocean protocol and Ocean market. So let's get started with what's Ocean? How would you tell someone who doesn't know Ocean what it is?
Perfect. Yeah. So the main problem that Ocean tries to solve is that we don't feel comfortable sharing our data. We also don't know the true value of our data and how to accurately price it. So as a business, sharing data is perceived as being a considerable risk, the risk of either losing your competitive advantage or violating, you know, some strict data privacy regulations. And as a consumer, sharing your data typically means, you know, with these big tech companies, typically means like losing control and privacy of your data. So there's a disconnect between data consumers and the providers of data. These consumers have algorithms. They want to access this quality data, and providers find that data is a bigger barrier to build AI, you know, to train these AI models. And this has led to data becoming siloed and value extraction being concentrated in the hands of those few dominant players. So in this problem, this pain point, what if data could be traded openly and those barriers for cost of sharing data could plummet? And if we could do that, we could unlock a brand new data economy, breaking down the silos that these incumbent organizations have created and open access to quality data. And that's really the founding idea or principle of Ocean Protocol as the sort of connective tissue between data consumers and providers. So at its core, Ocean really empowers and works to give data publishers the power to take control of their data, share data the way they want, and monetize data how they want. And those features are all in the application of the Ocean Marketplace itself. So if you're able to do this at scale, it's not only promoting data sovereignty, because now you're in control of it, you're the owner of your self-sovereign data, but also steer the data economy from its previous shadow opaque state into one that's really decentralized and transparent via these open data exchanges.
So Ocean is really a place, a marketplace to exchange data in which people like you and I, we can provide the data that we want. It's not just blockchain data, but also personal data. And it can be sold to anyone who wants to buy it to train their AI models or to do whatever they want with it. And this is basically, to put it in a different way, you know, how we're giving data for free to, you know, Facebook and Google and all these different platforms. What you're trying to do is that now we can monetize our own data and we can be rewarded for giving other people access to our data. Is that the entire business model?
Yeah, I would say that how you framed it covers a lot of the surface area of the Ocean Protocol. And one of the key things is the unlocking the data providers, right? So introducing them to this Web3 data sovereignty mission that you can come and have this peer-to-peer data exchange and get rewarded for providing valuable data. So being able to sell your data, that's one aspect of the business model. And also the feature of, I like to say, so imagine Ocean Protocols like Airbnb, but instead of houses, on the marketplace, that's data sets, and there's no intermediary broker. It's just peer-to-peer via the protocol. So if you choose to come and sell your data set, you have multiple options on how you want to sell it. So this is the individual's kind of business model, right? So you could sell it for a fixed rate. You could sell it actually via an AMM, so an automated market maker. So when you publish a data set, you can have the data set itself be dynamically priced by the demand of the set. So that means you can buy access tokens to that data set and then stake via LP, a liquidity provider, just like you would in a Balancer or a Uniswap. And you can then, if you're providing liquidity on that data set, you can then collect fees based off of the trade. So that is another way, you know, someone could earn on data by providing liquidity to that data set itself.
Interesting. So let's talk a little bit about the token design and the structure of the Ocean token. And before we go there, to summarize, we have three, probably we call them the economic agents, the three most important economic agents or structures in this space. You've got the data providers, you've got the people who purchase the data, and you've got these people who are staking the data so that people can buy and sell. And then everything comes together in the marketplace, which is what Ocean Protocol facilitates. And how does the ocean token come in into these different three economic agents and the entire structure of the marketplace?
Let's start with the ocean token and then I'll break down those three silos. So the ocean token, right, it's ERC-20, and this is the means of payment in the ocean ecosystem. So this is what you're buying and selling data sets with, is the ocean token. You can also use the ocean token to stake on assets. So this is for the stakers in those economic participant model you just presented. So if you're a staker, you can use it to stake on assets and then share in the transaction fees generated. And then a fourth component of network participant for the ocean token is actually the ocean token for governance, right? So you can use this as a voting on the ocean DAO. So you have the buyers and sellers, the suppliers and consumers using it as a means of exchange for payment. And then you have the stakers who are using it to generate shares. And then you have shares of transaction fees. And then you have the people using it for governance and in grants in the ocean DAO.
Got it. So the main function of Ocean is the currency function, where we buy and sell assets, and the assets are the data that is provided by others. And then you can stake on these assets, which is the data provided by others, and then also be part of the DAO, where you can make changes to the governance. How does one understand which assets to stake on? Because it's not your data. And how do I qualify the data's quality?
Great question. Yeah, so just simply, putting myself in the shoes of user on the market, So simply going to the Ocean Marketplace, and you can see the data sets that are published. And if you are a scientist or just genuinely curious about a data set and you're, wow, this is valuable data. So whether you've downloaded that data set yourself and combed through it and seen what data is inside of it and you think it's undervalued, then you can, however you do your due diligence, right, on a data set. So you think this data set is being used by a lot of AI practitioners that train their model, but it's not accurately priced, or you think this data set's valuable and then you might have some aligned skin in the game. And so you can maybe start to reach out to potential buyers for it. So there's a lot of different angles to approaching due diligence on a data set that are very specific to what are the economies, rather the intricacies of that exact data set. So it's hard to put a one size fits all on, you know, some methodology for each data set. It's, again, just like an Airbnb house listing, like, you know, which one should I stay at? Those features, those qualities that you look for that are important to you that you'd want to stake on.
So in this token design that we talked about, the structure of Ocean really functions as this currency and also almost like a general validation model where people can also see what data sets are good and then I can stake my Ocean for that. Other than that, I can also use the Ocean to make payments for stuff. So when it comes to token design, one of the things, or when it comes to tokens in general, one of the most important thing is that tokens are a representation of value. So what kind of value is Ocean accruing in this protocol and how does it accrue value?
I view the Ocean token's value is a premium on the value of peer-to-peer data exchange. So as more and more network stakeholders begin to unlock their data and understand the power of Web3 technology and having your own sovereignty, and more people coming to provide data sets, this token is the means by which you get access to the self-sovereign data, unlocking self-sovereign data. And I feel like there's a tremendous amount of value in that premise, just as building the full stack of Web3 applications. And I feel like this data layer, in the lens of building a full stack Web3 application, is a crux, focal point of, you know, any future full stack Web3 application. And as more and more consumes, it's all about data consumed volume. That's our core metric in the Ocean Marketplace. That is the equivalence of the Ocean token as a medium of exchange, having the other thing they talk about is like velocity of money. So you have it as a medium of exchange, but as data consumed volume is going up, you know, you have the spending, the velocity of that currency also going up that can create this positive enforcement loop on the Web3 data economy. I think it's a really powerful mechanism.
So if Ocean is kind of like Airbnb, but for personal data or for any data that you want, then the value accrual is really the availability of data that anyone can use, buy, and train their any models. And so the Ocean protocol really captures this value created by the network of providing data, and it accrues value through the quality of data being available and people using the data to do whatever they want. So this helps to increase the utility of the Ocean protocol, because the only way to get access to the data is to purchase with the Ocean token. And this is different from USDC or just using USD in general, because USD is a lot more available. And Ocean is really specific to this protocol, and everything around the protocol will be using the token. And that really ties into the next point of how do you sell the data? How do you price the data? Because one of the best things about, or one of the easiest things with pricing assets with the US dollars is that it really helps with the medium of exchange. We understand the value of USD. But with Ocean, it fluctuates in price. So how do you price your assets in another asset that fluctuates relatively to the market demand and supply?
Yep. So when you create a data, publish a data set on the Ocean marketplace, it mints a basket of data tokens. So data tokens represent both the value and the ownership rights of a data set. So what you're buying with the Ocean token when you go to buy a data set is actually this data token. And it is just like an NFT. It represents a unique claim on that digital data set, right? So rather, just like an NFT represents a unique claim on a digital good, a data token represents the same for a data asset. So you need this data token to access this data set. So when you buy that token, that is what you can actually go and stake on that data set. So as more consumes are happening and more people are buying it, so that's the demand, so that you will have the volatility of that asset. So as more people are buying and selling, you'll have the volatility of the asset, but also the collective amount of people staking on that data also helps to calm down the volatility, because it makes it less of that, more people are staking it and providing liquidity and price support to that asset itself. So we like to, at scale, which is really, a magical thing about Ocean Protocol, is like the market gets to price the data set. So you would hope that, these are fairly priced by the market, and with price support and liquidity being provided by those who have bought the data token.
So the pricing that is based on the market demand and supply is really via the AMM model that you were talking about?
Exactly. Yeah. So when you come and publish on a data set on the Ocean marketplace, you have a few different ways you can choose to sell. So you can sell it for a fixed rate, which is just straight up, we're going to sell this data set for 50 oceans, let's say. Or you can choose to put it in this AMM dynamic pricing pool. So you can give the pricing power over to the marketplace and let the market decide its value, which does create like this more volatile. Also, we have a few more features on the actual buying and consumption of the data sets, which I could touch on a little later. But we use balancer proxy contracts for the AMM. So you can choose how many data tokens you want to create and the ratio between the Ocean tokens provided in that in one side of the AMM versus access tokens.
So this is interesting, because when we talk about AMMs in general, there's a fixed amount of assets that you can put, let's say ETH versus USDC. Whereas when it comes to data, data is a different kind of resource, a different kind of asset, and there is no limit to the amount of data available. With data, it's fixed. You can just copy and paste to create a brand new set. And so who determines the set available that people can purchase, and who will be staking it? Because you said that people can come in and stake their Ocean on these various AMM pools, become a liquidity provider. But do I, as a staker, do I determine the amount of sets available, or will the LP creator, the pool creator, determine that? And how is it determined?
So it's by the pool creator, exactly. So the publisher itself gets to decide how many access tokens they want to mint. And then it is up to them how they choose to sell their data, how they choose to rather to publish their data, what kind of seller format, more or less, like how they choose to sell their data. So whether it's fixed price or leased or live updates of data. So exactly your point, right? So I come and buy a data set, 6 months ago, and then it's not, I try to use that data set again. Why is it still valuable? Well, so that publisher can choose to have liveness to their data, and therefore it will have present moment value to that data set. So whether it's in the minting, the LP creator choosing how many data tokens to mint, or the LP creator, the publisher, same person, right? And, if they want to keep that data set live, then they can curate that data set over a longer period of time to drive more value to that data set.
So as an LP of these different data sets, do you stake your Ocean and sets, or do you just stake the Ocean? And what are you staking over there?
Yes, so you're staking Ocean and data token. So each pool can be weighted differently. We've tuned the design quite a bit since the launch in Q4 of 2020. So the main thing to be cognizant of is the rug pulls by the LP. So really being cognizant of safer staking, which is keeping the price constant and while keeping it safe for people to stake and unstake Ocean. So how do you decrease the likelihood of impermanent loss too? These are all, you know, questions and solutions we've been working towards gradually. And hopefully people will be delighted in like the next rollout of V4 that it'll be more flexible for LPs to create data sets while also, you know, those who do want to have a portfolio of data sets, you know, those who are staking on it. It's a pretty amazing future, right? Like you can find these data sets early, you can start to earn on data by finding data sets early that are undervalued and can generate fees while also, you know, having the upside of these data sets. And, you know, you can, by LPing in data assets, you can get a more diversified portfolio, which is all what data as an asset class is all about.
Yeah, completely agree with you. I mean, everything that we're talking about, a lot of conversations these days is about data being the new oil. And if you can find a good plot of land, a data that's underpriced, and you can go in early on it, stick it as an LP, that will make a lot of sense. And especially as more people are using data to optimize their models, this will make a lot of sense. I want to spend a little bit more time talking about the DAO, the governance, the design of the DAO and everything. So whatever we've talked about so far is understanding what Ocean is. And it's really a marketplace to exchange data and to trade data. And the token comes in as a currency, as a medium of exchange to purchase these data sets, as well as trying to keep the entire network alive by staking on these various places, like staking the DAO, staking in the nodes, staking as an LP in these liquidity like AMMs. And the DAO was introduced last year, Q4 last year. How is the DAO functioning right now? And what was the entire thought process of creating the DAO?
To date, most institutions and organizations are hierarchical in their nature. And why they do this is to solve human coordination failure. And they do this with, you know, top-down leadership. But when you have an open source internet protocol, there's no necessarily a leader. And if everyone, just by nature of having their token, have skin in the game and be a stakeholder, how does that actually translate to influence and governance over the protocol itself? So we started with the Ocean token, and then we built the Ocean marketplace. And to arrive at this fully fledged, aggressive decentralization, flat Ocean marketplace organization, the implementation of governance was the last step. So what I mean by that is by the way of the Ocean DAO. So I'll break that down. So the Ocean DAO is a grants DAO, and people come and use their Ocean token to vote on which projects get grant funding. And the projects, they attempt to try to have a positive ROI towards the Ocean marketplace. So positive ROI meaning can contribute to data consumed volume. So if we're funding a grant project, if the Ocean token holders are voting and curating for a grant project, that project can then go, they get $10,000 worth of funding, they can create 50,000 Ocean worth of value. That excess value can flow back to the DAO treasury, and then we have a greater treasury and it can fund more projects that can create excess value to the Ocean marketplace. So it kind of creates this set, we call it the Web3 self-sustainability loop. And by voting on positive projects, they can contribute positive ROI. That positive ROI can go fund more projects, all by empowering the Ocean governance hold, those that are participating in governance, to contribute and vote on things. So it's not only this mechanism layer that I was mentioning, that sustainability loop, but also, you know, the social layer of getting people to coordinate and vote. So I would say, yeah, it's twofold, and all with the nature of keeping things flat and arriving at self-sustainability for the Ocean protocol.
Interesting. So yeah, DAO is really the last coordination layer when we have the entire marketplace built. And with a lot of these application layers of protocols, it's really a marketplace where you just allow buyers and sellers to come in to trade. Whatever they trade is things that they own. In this case, it's data. So the DAO is really the coordination tool to allow these people to come together to trade and to grow this entire ecosystem. So one of the main things that, as you mentioned, is the grants. And that means that the protocol itself has an amount of Ocean as part of the treasury to continuously grow this ecosystem. So where is this amount of treasury coming from?
So right now, the funds are coming from the Ocean Protocol Foundation. So we've been committing generous amounts of Ocean every funding cycle, which are monthly, with proposals due on the first Tuesdays of every month. Yeah, so funding comes from the OPF. However, as the marketplace gets more and more consumes and more publishers on the platform, we're going to look to flip the switch and have the funds no longer come from the OPF treasury, but rather from a 5% fee off of the consumes itself, off of the purchases of data sets itself. So that actually is the way for the Web3 sustainability loop. So as more and more people are buying and selling data sets, 5% goes into the DAO treasury. The DAO treasury then goes funds positive ROI projects. Those positive ROI projects have more data consume volume, and then more fees flow back to the treasury. So kind of a twofold answer to your question. So right now the OPF funds, and we're going to look to have it funded by the core mechanism as the marketplace scales.
Interesting. So right now, there is no transaction fees that is being accrued by the protocol, and it's really just pure buyers and sellers. The only fees that's being accrued is via the AMM to LP stakers, but Ocean itself doesn't accrue any value yet, or doesn't make any profits if you think about it.
Yes, so no, at the moment, no fees flow to the DAO treasury.
Got it. So before we dive a bit deeper into understanding the voting and the various mechanisms in DAO, I think, Koja, you have a question that you want to ask?
No. Will not the unauthorized reuse of data compromise the model? What is the disincentive within the system which prevents this?
Great question, and thank you. So the Ocean Marketplace is the user interface layer of the Ocean Protocol. So if there is an unauthorized republication of data that is not being sold by the intellectual property rights holder, we have a mechanism called Purgatory, which is an open repo on our, quite frankly, on our GitHub. And people can come and make data claims, or rather intellectual property right claims, on republished data sets that are posted. So if it passes through arbitration, it's flagged as been incorrectly published for intellectual property rights violations. It can be taken down off of the front end of our marketplace.
Thank you.
A few things to unpack. So firstly, the mechanism, we like to think of the Ocean DAO, and quite frankly, DAOs that have a efficient mechanism as, these are neutral platforms. So as more and more governance and mechanisms gets introduced, that only increases the surface area for attack. It's not a matter of if someone's going to exploit the system akin to someone's trying to put invalid blocks, the Bitcoin blockchain. It's just a matter of when. And can your governance be anti-fragile so when this happens, it doesn't break? So that's kind of the core impetus for how we've gone about designing the DAO mechanism with the goal of having these projects have positive ROI. So not a matter of if, but when people try to exploit the system. So how did we make these? How did we put these things into the world? How did we implement them? So at first it was, this, I leaned in on it earlier in this conversation, to the progressive decentralization. So yes, there was a core kind of implementers team to start. And what were the actual toolings? What's the tooling stack that was going to be used to allow people to vote? How long were these voting periods? How could you use your Ocean tokens? By which voting methodology we were using? Just getting something shipped and out into the world was incredibly valuable. Then, as we've been doing this, so we're on our 11th DAO round right now. So we've been doing this for 11 months. And every round, we have feedback from our community on which things worked, which didn't work. And also starting to open up our public GitHubs, you can come and work with the Ocean team on the implementation of these mechanism designs. So one example where we had people coming to help on building some of these mechanisms was when we only had voting with Ocean in your wallet to start. So actually community members being able to vote with your staked Ocean on these DAO proposals. So instead of having to withdraw your Ocean to have impermanent loss potentially and pay gas fees, you could have access to them. Continuing down this train of thought, we have our governance mechanism call every month where people can propose new ideas. And then also we have a lively Discord where people are giving feedback and sharing more updates, their thoughts on the DAO mechanisms itself. So arbitration, if something happens within the DAO that is against the Ocean, you know, mission or values, we try to have the mechanism stop that before it even takes place. So this could be things like, oh, you're coming and proposing a 100,000 Ocean grant proposal and you've only been in DAO a week. So you can't do that because the mechanism itself would stop, you know, your first time in the DAO for your first down round, your maximum as of the round 11 parameters is only, you know, 3,000 Ocean. So it's kind of gradually you build up trust in the DAO community, helps building clout, building reputation, building a community standing. Those sorts of mechanisms try to help not having as many exploits to the system. So hopefully I was able to unpack some of the questions there, and yeah, happy to add more. We use the tooling snapshot, and this is all as voting starts to happen. Everything's public and transparent as votes are coming in. We use Discord and Discourse, the forum. So as people are giving proposal updates, they're able to get feedback on what they're working on. And then we have our OceanDAO Town Hall weekly, where projects can come give updates on what they're building. And then as a proposal's live and people are voting, Ocean does work by one token, one vote right now. And we've had feedback on just around the whale of voting. So we look at other types of voting methodologies, whether that can be things like ranked choice voting or quadratic voting, or there's some other types of voting mechanisms called futurarchy or conviction voting, where you can stake on outcomes, and if they actually hit those outcomes, you can then earn on them. There's lots of different ways to play with the governance sandbox to most effectively drive outcomes. But as we all have seen, people can influence voting. So something like quadratic voting is powerful, where, say, someone comes with 100 Ocean and one token, one vote, they would be more powerful than 9 people voting with 10 Ocean tokens. However, if quadratic voting, whatever that crossover number is, it's however many votes square rooted, you know, the 9 individuals would be more powerful than the 100 in that instance. Yep. So this is what's really important about having a high number of proposals inside of the Ocean DAO, where we have, say, 100,000 Ocean up for grants, really driving the amount of proposals forward, where the number of grant funds requested is greater than 100,000. So let's say 200,000 Ocean worth of grants. So therefore, people are highly incentivized. It's more competitive each round. We're going through and actually doing due diligence on these proposals, these grant proposals, instead, because if we only have, you know, 50,000 Ocean requested out of 100,000, there's no negative because people can vote no. So as if none of them are downvoted, you know, then everyone would get granted. So really having a competitive round is very important for us to drive, you know, more people to come vote. And also, this is a crypto industry related problem, right? So the first time people come to hold a token, it's for speculation. The next time they start leveling up, they start learning, they'll come use a token for its utility. So whatever protocol you're on, to lend, to stake, to collateralize, to, you know, buy Ocean tokens, to do liquidity games, you know, whatever that token utility is. And then finally, you learn about governance. And that is kind of this user story where there is attrition down that pipeline. So how do you just continually educate people on what their tokens can do? And there is no fees to vote on Ocean DAO. It's gasless voting. You're just continuing to activate voters. So not only competition, but education as well. There's different levels of fidelity to this. So very simply is just getting people's tokens off of exchanges into non-custodial wallets, because then you can actually, you know, do the utility and governance functions of these things. There's another trend of stewards or a council. So it's a little more complex, where if you don't want to participate in governance every round, you can just delegate your voting rights to a steward or a council member, and they can vote on your behalf. So this is things like Gitcoin stewards or synthetics council members. They have this. These sorts of delegation games are already going on with layer one proof of stake networks. If you don't want to run a validator, if you don't want to participate in voting, then you just delegate. So that already exists on the L1 chain. Now it's evolving on more the application stewardship, at the application stewardship level. So having a really close community for onboarding new folks to the DAO and having things ready. If I just show up, I'm looking to get involved, but what can I work on? So having a community that can point new people to what able to work on, having things that people can come take. That's what's so cool about a DAO. It's you don't need permission to start. You don't get a job, you take a job. And that's a really powerful thing. So having opportunities to take on work is another one. I am so excited about the self-sovereign nature of Web3, being able to own your own things, you know, being able to reclaim the value that is getting extracted out of you and, you know, being the owner of your self-sovereign data. It just, as more time passes, it becomes more and more clear how valuable this premise is. So I would highly encourage people listening today to check out Ocean Marketplace. And it's as easy as using a DEX to go to look at what data as an asset class looks like. And just how, you know, when you're learning about Bitcoin, first on how, you know, you have these kind of aha, providence moving light bulb moments. And as you explore, you know, Ocean Protocol, there are these really visceral light bulb moments where it's just like, wow, this is how powerful this technology is. And yeah, what's coming down the pipeline, we have Ocean V4 coming out in a couple quarters. No exact timeline on that, but it is soon. And we're aiming to do safer staking in V4 and some other user experience iterations on top of the marketplace. And then with the DAO itself, so yeah, looking to grow the Ocean DAO round over round, more and more proposals coming in. So at the start of Ocean DAO, you know, there was just a handful of projects in Ocean DAO in October of last year. And now seeing these projects come full circle, we see what they're shipping and that they're getting users and making things people want is a really powerful narrative. And they are now helping onboard new DAO members as well. So they found a lot of meaning in this and are really excited to share what they've learned to, you know, new DAO members. So things on the thesis of Ocean, what's coming down on the pipeline for Ocean Marketplace, and then, you know, what's coming down the pipeline for the DAO. So if you're thinking about building a project for the data economy, I highly encourage you to come check out Ocean DAO. So that's at, yeah, oceanprotocol.com/DAO. And if you have Ocean tokens, come vote with the DAO round.
Thank you so much for staying throughout this entire video. If you're interested to learn more and you want to join the community, do check out our Discord, check out our Academy, and you get to watch these videos for free as well, without any ads. And also grab the book that I've talked about earlier on. The book summarizes a lot of what we're trying to build, what we're trying to design, and the different aspects that can be changed during the entire design process. We also just launched Econteric. Econteric is really economics plus esoteric, because this space is so complicated and so difficult. What we want to do is to make it easier for anyone to come and learn and be part of this system. So in Econteric, we are breaking down the different analytics and different data to give you more insights to understand the robustness from a very fundamental level of the health of this ecosystem. So check out econteric.com and I'll see you there. Bye.